Welcome to the Full Press Fantasy Pod, part of Full Press Coverage. My name is Kyle Senra, and joining me are both of my co-hosts, Alessandro Senator and Kayla Morton. How are you both doing?
Great.
Doing pretty good, Kyle.
Kayla won that time.
Shut up.
Wow, aggression. But that's me, so yeah. Karma, right? We're spreading some good karma, bringing a really great guest on today, someone who's been on the podcast a couple times before. I know I'm working well with him at Going for Two, but he's also at Dynasty Draft Room. So everyone, please welcome Ryan Searfoss. How you doing, Foss?
Fantastic. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah.
Always good to be back.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you did your projections episode with us last year early, and that was really informative for us and our listeners. And then, of course, so you came on for the Ravens episode as well.
Twice click.
Yeah. It just happened to be two pretty episodes almost back to back. And we don't have a Ravens managing editor, so we may actually summon you for that episode again this year.
Sounds good.
Awesome. But yeah, it's always a blast having you on. I know you're a pretty sharp fantasy mind, so it'll be good to get your insights here. So Dynasty Draft Room, where Ryan's at, this is an episode similar to what we did right after the draft, NFL draft, of course, where we went and ranked each of the teams in each division 1-4 based on how they did in the draft. We're gonna do something a bit more geared towards fantasy. And so, doing the same thing, ranking each division 1-4, but for how well the offenses will perform. I think this is the key here is to know which, fantasy offenses we want to invest heavily into. And which ones we'd prefer to avoid outside of maybe one or two players, if that. So we'll go division by division, cover the AFC today and NFC in the next episode. So as always, start in the East. I mean, Kayla, Alessandro, it's your division. So we have a fairly consensus here. So for most of you said Buffalo is the number one offense in this division, Miami 2, Jets 3, and then the Patriots 4. I guess I have to start defending myself because I actually said the Dolphins are the number one offense. I think specifically, I think the defense for Buffalo is between marginally and significantly. There's a word there. It's probably just better. But I think that the defense is tilts towards Buffalo's favor enough that I think Miami's going to have to be involved in more shootouts, more high scoring games, whereas Buffalo can afford to not score as many points and still win games. So that's why I have Miami as a better overall offense, even though I think the Bills are probably a better overall team. I would suspect the favorites to win the division at this point. Now, everyone else has them at one, so you can all start yelling at me if you want.
Crickets.
I don't really have a problem with it. If we're looking at like scoring and versatility of the offense, I think you have more pieces fantasy-wise you can be confident with in Buffalo, whether it's Diggs. We know John Brown's going to have his role with big plays. I think Diggs is going to see volume. We'll see action at the tight end. Josh Allen has a solid floor for quarterback play, which you don't really know what you can trust with the Fitzmagic and Tua combination. And then you have both backs who could give you RB3 potential, RB2 potential, one of each for Buffalo. I think that's what separates them. Miami's top-heavy with Parker and Preston Williams, but I don't trust a lot of that after that. I don't know who's going to be getting the lead back role with Howard or Mostert. That's where the questions come in, and I'm also an avid Gesicki hater, so we'll just leave that where it's at.
You see, and I'm actually really digging Gesicki this year, so and I think that's part of it, is I'd rather have Gesicki than Dawson Knox this year and in Dynasty. I think that's, regardless of format, I'd prefer Gesicki, I think. So that I'm coming from that perspective as well. And especially for 2020, I don't really see a big difference between the backfields. I think it'll be a split between Howard and Breida as much as it'll be a split
Breida,
between...
by the way, not Mostert.
I caught that. I was going to say something.
It's because all the 49ers running backs are just the same person with a different nameplate last year. So I apologize for that.
Well, that's why I love JaMychal Hasty. Spark score freak who can catch passes. It's like he fits in so perfectly with the 49ers. I just had to mention JaMychal Hasty, even though this isn't an NFC episode. Sorry, everyone who's getting tired of that. But it's going to keep happening. but yeah, the backfields, I don't see them as that different. I think Moss and Singletary are going to split about as much as Howard and Breida. I suppose Buffalo is probably going to run more than Miami, so I guess you'd prefer to invest in either the Buffalo running backs. But they're all kind of in a similar range for me. So I think Superflex, I think Josh Allen is very clearly the best fantasy asset in this division. But I think in non-Superflex scoring, I think it's Devontae Parker pretty easily. I don't really trust anyone in Buffalo to kind of... Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, Parker, I guess maybe two is a new quarterback for him, but I guess I'm more of the opinion that Fitzpatrick's going to start more than not. And so Parker's got a connection already with Fitzpatrick, especially end of the year. He was going to him heavily. And Diggs is going to have to learn with a new quarterback. I don't know. I see Parker, like you mentioned, top heavy. I see Parker pretty much locked in for 150 targets. I don't know what your projections say on that, Ryan. Am I being too generous with Parker there?
So I have him with 113 targets, 65 receptions, 991 yards, and 7 touchdowns.
Yeah, I guess I haven't done full-out projections like you have, but I kind of view him as someone who's, I don't know, 113 seems low to me. I'm saying maybe 130 maybe is more reasonable than what I said originally, but I guess that's where I come out on Parker. I'm someone who I'm going to invest pretty heavily in this year, and I don't know that Diggs is going to be the number one guy. It might still be John Brown. I know Brandon Ray on our 100th episode, he thinks it's actually going to be Beasley. And with all that uncertainty, I think Parker's path is clear. So that's maybe why I'm seeing them as at least him as the asset.
Yeah, so I want to chime in here. Even though I think Devontae Parker is the clear number one receiver in Miami, and he bolsters just because Fitzpatrick is going to be in there to start the season and, prolong throughout the season, whether or not, you know, the Dolphins turn it around and end up as playoff contenders or have a winning record, or even if they're not doing so well, they're not going to throw Tua in behind what could be a new starting five on the offensive line just for him to have his career potentially ruined with some kind of injury because nobody's on the same page. So even though, you know, Parker to me is the best wide receiver in the division. And that doesn't just go based on last season. He's shown flashes, but he was finally able to bring the flashes from every category into his play in 2019. I think as a whole, when you look at the receiving core in Buffalo, having those three guys outplays Parker and outplays the three guys that Miami could put in the receiving core. I'm thankful that Albert Wilson restructured his contract, was willing to, both parties were, so that he could remain on the roster. I think when healthy, he is a very solid number two, but it really comes into question, you know, Ryan, like you said, you know, who's a number three guy? Who else do they have back there? You could throw in Allen Hurns, but I'm not confident with that. And for some reason, Miami just chooses not to insert Isaiah Ford out, who came out of Virginia Tech a few years ago, even though he's proven to even be the number one wide receiver for Ryan Fitzpatrick. So I think, even though the running back core in Miami is now stronger than Buffalo's, in my opinion, I think the lack of the three receivers in Miami is what made me choose one for Buffalo over the Dolphins.
Alessandro, do you want to chime in on either the Bills or the Dolphins?
I mean, look, I think the Bills are going to be the best offense in this division this year, and, you know, and the reason why I put Miami as number two is because they got better wide receivers than the Jets, because right now the Jets just have Crowder because they lost Robbie to Carolina. So now they just got Crowder, who is very dependable and very good, but that's just one person. Perryman's still unknown. Mims is still unknown. So until I can actually see what they can do in BR, I feel like the Jets, as far as offense goes, is number three, because they've got Bell and Frank Gore, a really good backfield, but you're not going to get much else. I mean, you got maybe like three viable fantasy players between Darnold, Crowder, Bell, and Gore, if you want to go that far. Hopefully Herndon can go back to tight end supremacy and be good again, but we'll see how he recovers from his hammy injury. So that's why I said Miami's number two right now, but I think it's Buffalo, Miami, Jets, New England at this point for the AFC East, just for cope stag purposes.
I mean, I was going to say it's almost unanimous. I just messed everything up, so sorry, everyone. But does anyone want to talk about either the Jets being at number three, the Patriots at four?
I think the Patriots are super interesting because there's the first time we've had a question mark at quarterback in two decades. and we have no idea who Stidham's going to lock onto. Chances are it's not going to be Edelman, who's had all this time working with Brady. Stidham came up when N'Keal Harry did, so it may be he forms a bond. I think he can form a bond with him. I think he's somebody who can step up in that offense. And the running backs are huge. Everything's a question with them. But it could surprise people just because Belichick does know how to make it work. You even have Marquise Lee, who's on that team that nobody remembers, which I didn't until last week on our podcast. But there's some talent there. It's just how are they going to mesh with everything different? I think that's why they're last, but it could be a quick riser.
Didn't the Jinx bring him up? Is that what happened?
Yeah, because he's obsessed with Marquise Lee.
Yeah. Well, we'll see if he... I mean, it's not like Marquise Lee needs any more jinxes than what he already has, so...
No, but I do love N'Keal Harry's skill set. I think he could surprise people. I think he's potentially the best... one of the best receivers in that conference as well. Or the division as well. We just are not patient. No one in the fantasy community is patient right now. Because he had an off season when he came up. But he could be somebody who's worth waiting for.
I know for myself, the quick note with... I was actually really close on both. I was back and forth on who would be three, who would be four. I just think the Patriots probably have a better overall defense, and that's why I went four again. I expect, again, the teams with better defenses may not score as many points as the teams with poor defenses. I know that factored in why I put Miami at one. So I'm gonna mention that a few times throughout this episode. Kayla, did you want to talk about either Jets or Patriots?
Yeah, so I was kind of like you in trying to decide who would be three or four. Really what made the deciding factor for me for the Jets to be three was the fact that they do have an established quarterback. I think, you know, I'm skeptical with the wide receivers that they have, and I'm not sure if Le'Veon Bell is in the best place that he will be able to amplify and showcase his skill sets. I don't think he has the head coach or the offensive coordinator that allows him to, you know, really show what he can do. So I feel like there's a lot of missing pieces for the Jets, but the fact that New England doesn't have a quarterback and is hoping, you know, that Mohamed Sanu, after coming over from Atlanta, can really fill in to be one of those top wide receivers, and trying to learn probably a new offense again, somewhat, you know, with the new quarterback, and, you know, hoping that N'Keal Harry can have a full season and not be injured. We saw, you know, parts of why he succeeded in Arizona State show in his he was on injured reserve, but that just along with, you know, how much, you know, running backs like James White and even Rex Burkhead relied on Tom Brady, I just feel as though their adjustment is going to be rocked. And I don't think Sony Michel is in the place where he can handle a full workload. So just all the negatives about the players, no matter what their potential is, their floor is a lot lower than the Jets, in my opinion. So that's where I put them down at.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. I mean, the Jets right now could be the second-best offense in the division, but there's so many question marks going into the season regarding the offensive line and the wide receiver core. Besides Crowder, I mean, the backfield is, I mean, I would say solid, because even if we don't get the same production out of Le'Veon Bell, you could definitely get production out of Frank Gore, or at least split production until something happens. Like, I don't know, Longay's getting fired, hopefully. So we'll just see how it goes. But for right now, I mean, I would have the 1, 2, 3, 4, as I said, was Buffalo, Miami, Jets, and New England. I mean, at the end of the year, we're probably going to see Buffalo, Jets, Miami, New England with, you know, Jets and Miami flip-flopping back and forth because they're so close and because New England is so far distantly behind. I mean, I'm not doubting Bill Belichick. I'm just doubting the fact that he's lost so many pieces as far as offense and defense and as far as, you know, key skill position players that I don't think they can recover just yet. Maybe give them a year or two, they may recover, or maybe, I don't know, they don't recover for 20 years. That'd be nice.
Maybe a little wishful thinking there. So we're going to migrate to the north now, and... surprise, surprise, the Ravens are the consensus number one offense in the AFC North, although not unanimous. Browns at 2, Bengals at 3, Steelers at 4. So, Kayla, all of us had the Ravens at 1 except for you, so you're going to start here. What's your reasoning behind putting the Browns at number 1?
Yeah, so I think I said a lot of this in the 100th episode. I did go back and forth with putting Cleveland or Baltimore at one, and just kind of really looked into it more. And, you know, while Lamar Jackson makes the case for being the best quarterback, especially because of his running back abilities in the NFL, I feel like Mark Ingram is on the decline. And, you know, while Mark Andrews is one of the better tight ends in the league and will likely go really high in fantasy drafts, like probably not even make it out of the third, fourth round, if that late. I'm not sold on their receiver core. I haven't been sold on their receiver core for years. And I think with more tape now, while I think, you know, Baltimore will still have double digit wins and Lamar Jackson will be a wrecking ball for most teams, I think, you know, we saw it happen with Baker Mayfield, you know, the other team I'll be talking about. But we saw after his first season how teams were able to defend a little bit better against him because they had the exposure to the tape of what he did in his what I feel is a phenomenal rookie season, even if the team overall record doesn't, you know, necessarily back that up. I think he took them off the ground higher than a lot of people were expecting. So I also think Cleveland has just more weapons that are available, especially when you look at it on paper. The depth for the wide receivers and the running backs are there. And they've even, I would even argue that they did it for the tight ends too, even if they decide to move on from David Njoku. But I just think with all of the possibilities that Cleveland has, it's hard to put Baltimore above the depth that Cleveland has. And I feel as though the depth at the wide receiver, running back, and tight end position outweighs the quarterback position that I feel is the real only strong suit of the offense that would be overpowering for Baltimore.
Of course, the dog would chime in. We're talking about the dog pound Browns, so.
He don't like me either.
Yeah, I wonder if, well, is that your conditioning there that you've, Ravens?
Yeah, brainwashed them. It's cool.
All right, well, I'll give you the shot to defend your Ravens first, Ryan.
Okay, I mean, Lamar Jackson, he's going to be top three quarterback in fantasy this year. She hit that. His rushing ability makes him a threat no matter what. He doesn't have to run for the record-breaking amount of yards that he did last year to give you an absolute ton of fantasy points. Running back-wise, I think it's kind of got a little bit downplayed. Mark Ingram may have a year left in him, maybe not, but they drafted J.K. Dobbins in the second round, who's absolutely a star in Ohio State. He's a 2,000-yard rusher. He was my number three running back coming into the draft, and he's possibly two now because of the landing spot. He brings a dynamic speed to the backfield that Ingram doesn't have. And they still have Gus Edwards, who was the quietest 700 yards rushing last year that we've seen in a while. And RIP, my Justice Hill shares. Hollywood Brown really started to show up late, especially in the playoff game where he had over 100 yards receiving in it. And him and Lamar have been locked together the whole offseason. And then they took Devin Duvernay in the third round this year to go with Miles Boykin. They're very young there. But there's definitely upside in receivers who bring a lot of different things and variables to the offense. And then again, Mark Andrews is going to be a target hog there. He's going to lead the team in targets again this year. And yes, they don't have the depth at tight end yet, but that means his fantasy value is going to be high because he's not competing with Austin Hooper and Njoku. It was close with Cleveland because I have their receivers both higher. I love OBJ and I love Landry. I think Landry's solid as can be, but there's a lot I don't trust because a lot of guys I think are basically feed into each other's potential or like kind of take away from each other's potential in fantasy because they have a lot of guys that have similar things. So we know that Baltimore, who's going to be the running back unless something happens with Ingram, but is it going to be Chubb or Hunt? Who's going to be getting that? Who's going to be getting the tight end targets, whether it's Hooper and Njoku or they still had someone else taking our other dude from last year. I can't think of his name.
Is it Ricky Seals-Jones?
Yeah, they still have him. Like, there's a lot of targets to go around. I don't think he'll be – I think it's between Hooper and Njoku, but it's still a lot. And we need Baker to throw for over 4,000 yards to make all these guys fantasy relevant. Especially with the way Hunt's going to take out targets in the passing game. that's where my concern is. That's what put it there for me, because there's not enough high-end plays at their positions.
So here's the thing. We're talking about offenses as a whole. We haven't broken down individual players. So I'm going to take the team to have a better offense that has more weapons and more guys with the availability to get it done. And we talked in previous episodes, Alejandro, Kyle, and I, about, you know, the playoff game, especially where Marquise Brown had the 100 yards that you mentioned. And that was solely because Tennessee chose to take Mark Andrews out of the game. And Mark Andrews also wasn't on his game. You know,
Mark Andrews was hurt.
Yeah, I know. I just said he wasn't on his game.
Ingram. Yeah.
And I was about to say, we saw it, how he was injured when it led to one of Lamar Jackson's interceptions. So, you know, they chose – Tennessee could have adjusted and probably should have adjusted. It didn't cost them the game, but should have adjusted to cover more on Marquise Brown. But Marquise Brown stood out in that game because Lamar Jackson was forced to throw it to him. When we looked at other games throughout the regular season, Lamar Jackson could get it done on the ground. And credit to him, you know, credit to Mark Andrews for doing that, or Mark Ingram for doing that. But, you know, when those two guys were taken out and they had to rely on Marquise Brown, they still didn't win the game. It doesn't matter what your stats are if, you know, you're relied on because people are injured and you didn't win the game. So if he was a guy that was going to step up for them, I would have liked to have seen him, you know, make more plays, catch more passes, be more of a threat in the red zone, you know, help bring the team back. So when I talk about Cleveland, I talk about all the versatility with Nick Chubb being able to run and Kareem Hunt being the pass down back. You know, we saw the adjustment with Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry. They had a tiff at the beginning of the season, you know, when one wasn't getting as many targets as the other, one wasn't finding the end zone as much as the other. But towards the end of the season, we saw that, you know, their roles changed and helped the team overall. So obviously Atlanta didn't keep Austin Hooper because of his contract, and, you know, the money it was going to knock against them, their team as a whole. So he lands in Cleveland where he has, you know, the offensive line and the offensive pieces around him to succeed. And, you know, you're kind of, I feel like they're comparable to Tampa Bay right now because, you know, you have three wide receivers arguably that could get the touchdowns, get the yards, have the big games, have the big plays. You have the multiple tight end set that, you know, one might be used for blocking, which opens up the other if receivers are taken, you know, out of the game. And, you know, that could fall into place with how Cleveland decides to use their tight ends. But I really just have the problem with, you know, saying that Baltimore has a better offense as a whole when they don't have the pieces that Cleveland does. So if you're looking at it strictly based on offense and, you know, all the different, you know, how they can use all their different weapons and positional players in different ways, you just can't tell me that, you know, Baltimore offers more than that because they don't.
But if you're looking at it as a whole, like you're saying, instead of just the individual pieces, that's where Baltimore clicks, because they're, the way they're built, their players mesh together. And that's where how it works. And you're talking about these guys being injured. Hollywood Brown also had 7 touchdowns last year, so he worked very well in the red zone. He didn't play any of camp because he came off his Lynch Frank injury. Then he got injured again week 5 and week 10 and played through them all season. And that's what was the slow start with him. But he still produced, especially for a rookie receiver with no camp experience. That's why it was so big for him to actually be practicing right now with Lamar. It's their offense is cohesive to what they do. And it works. We don't know what Cleveland's offense is going to look like. And they didn't know what it was going to look like last year because they were just basically playing backyard football and no one knew what was going on. And we have a shortened camp and nothing's changed there. We don't even know if their new offensive coordinators are going to have it looking like. That's where my issues are with them.
Right, and that's a concern, but to call it as a main overall issue and discredit the positional players that are there, I just have a hard time, you know, with you bringing up all the rookie wide receivers or the receivers coming off of injury. Like, that's great that Marquise Brown is practicing with Lamar Jackson because it's something he didn't have last season. I'm not discrediting that. I'm not discrediting how that's going to happen, but there's just more experience there, and to credit that you can go back and look at the stats and how the changes happened for both Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham, even, you know, mid-season. So with all of the, you know, big cluster problem that, you know, was Freddie Kitchens and was the offensive coordinator and how Baker Mayfield didn't get along with Kitchens or, you know, wide receiver times, they made that adjustment mid-season and you saw it come to fruition with these wide receivers, even when Kareem Hunt added another personnel player into the backfield and, you know, created maybe an opportunity for, you know, these receivers to not get them all these targets. So, you know, if you're going to hype up or harp on the fact that, you know, Baltimore has these guys that are coming in that could produce a certain way, you also have to be able to say the same thing for Cleveland, because, you know, these guys are all going to be trying to work together. And it showed that multiple pieces that have more pieces than Baltimore's offense were able to work together towards the end of the season. And the hope is that they can do it again, you know, when 2020 starts. Just like, it's the hope that all these pieces and people who didn't have the opportunity to be in training camp last year because of injuries or whatever, and people who are on their final legs, you have to have the hope that they're all going to mesh together. But saying Cleveland's offense didn't mesh together for all of 2019 is not reasonable.
Where's the drop-off coming in Baltimore's offense from last year, though?
With the wide receiver, you can't tell me that Willie Snead...
he's been replaced. Duvernay's his replacement.
Okay, but he was in the top three wide receivers when 2019 started. So if you're simply comparing the wide receiver core, you know, by teams, you have to give the edge to Cleveland. Like, I'm just kind of not understanding where you're doubting that. Like, I understand
67 yards a game coming from. That's the difference in production from last year. It's a lot. Number two offense to the number 20?
Right, because they had more pieces than Baltimore did. So obviously, individual stats are not going to amplify
children.
Those who have smaller stats.
We're going to debate this until the cows come home, but the fact of the matter is that they're good on both sides, and this is a really tough division to judge between Baltimore, Cleveland, and Pittsburgh. Cincinnati has a lot of questions and needs a lot to improve on. So we could throw that down there. But for the most part, this is going to be a very tough division first and foremost. And I think that we're all going to debate, because these are just predictions right now. Who knows? Cleveland can – offensive line can just go and have a whole lot of problems. Baltimore, I mean, Lamar Jackson could have an injury that will ruin his season. I hope to God not. I'm knocking on wood. No, I hope that he doesn't, but who knows? Because that's what's going to happen. This is football. But we do know one thing. Cincinnati's got a lot to improve on. And I really hope that they don't improve, because then I get to laugh at my friend. But I digress. We could debate this all day long. And Kyle, you've been awfully quiet.
Well, I guess there's the quick thing with the Browns and Ravens is I think the Browns have the better wide receivers. Running back core is pretty tough, but I think with the Ravens, definitely better quarterback, better tight end situation, at least for fantasy, for clarity. I mean, I guess Austin Hooper's kind of proven, but not proven in Cleveland. So I think the proven track record in that regard does lie with the Ravens. One concern I have, Ryan, how concerned are you with Marshall Yonder retiring? Just because he's been a stalwart there for years, do you think it'll be an easy adjustment for the Ravens?
I think it'll definitely be a little bit of a hit. They really like Bozeman, who should be taking his place, and their set of the tackles. So it's really just one of the guard spots they have to fill out. Exposed to start last year. Skurr's going to move to center. And they have a competition. Mirakai played a lot due to other people getting injured last year and played very admirably. So they're hoping he makes a step up. But it's still Marshall Yonda, who's one of the best guards in the league for the past decade. So it's definitely going to be a hit, especially for the leadership of that line. But it's still one of the top units because of the tackle play.
True, good point. And so, Alessandro, you were the lowest on both the Bengals and the Browns, but the reason for that is the rest of us all had the Steelers at 4 in this division. You had them at 2. So where do you think the success with the Steelers lies this year on their offense?
With their offensive line. I mean, for me, it's the Steelers, the Ravens, and the Browns that are going to be vying for top of this division, and I got tired of Ryan and Kayla going back and forth between these two, because they're going to do it all day long because this is football and we can't. No, I think the Steelers are going to, and this is a very close 2-3 between the Steelers and the Browns, but I think the Steelers are going to edge out, because for everything Big Ben is, he's a very good quarterback who's got very good passer play, and I think that he could, you know, help out. And with the offensive line, mostly retained, they only lost one player on their offensive line. I think he retired.
Ramon Foster, I believe, he signed a – who did he – I can't even remember who he signed with, but he left because he – coming off his rookie contract. They literally had, like, negative cap space entering free agency, so they really couldn't afford anybody. I think Foster's the only one they lost. Ryan, did they lose anyone else?
No, that's – I believe that's all the Steelers lost to on the line. They just had a lot of rotation last year.
Yeah, with the injuries. And, I mean, David DeCastro is still one of the best guards in the league. He might actually now be the best guard in the AFC North now that Yonda's retired.
It's true.
He's been vying for that for a long time because he's a pretty good player. But yeah, okay, so offensive line there. You're not done, Alessandro. You can finish.
No, the only thing I was going to say was because Big Ben's coming back, and while I don't know what kind of shape Big Ben will be in, I do know that if he is throwing proper, if he's throwing good enough and long enough that he can survive a game, that you know, Juju Smith-Schuster will be indebtedly better already. They got some wide receivers through the draft, and I'm pretty sure they picked up a wide receiver too during free agency. I got to double check on that, but I'm pretty sure they did. You know, James Conner's coming back, and they have Benny Snell at running back too. They have a three-headed monster. But the offense is going to definitely be better with them around. Now, the Browns, on the other hand, they have offensive line issues because they are adding pieces. So that offensive line's going to mesh. Plus, Baker Mayfield's got to get more accurate, and he has to do things on a little bit sharper tone. But I think they have capable wide receivers. They have a good backfield. They just got to work on the front, the front offensive line. And – you know, with Austin Hooper going there, I hope Hooper keeps the same production, but we're talking about a totally different offense. We're talking about literally switching from the NFC to the AFC, and we're talking about two different, you know, schemes, setups. So I don't know if Hooper's going to be the same. I have to see. So but that's why I say they're very close to, because they got some question marks that could hinder them. But they got a lot of solid things, and if everything goes clicking, then they're going to be really good.
Anyone else here really scared about Ben's elbow, though? Because I know that it's been positive reports, but at this point, that type of injury that's been really unseen in the NFL in over a decade, I'm in the camp of I got to see it before I can buy in. So I'm going to be ranked a lot lower on the Steelers receivers this year. Not that high on Juju coming into this season. Probably do better than last year, but I'm still hesitant to move him up back up to that top tier, top two tiers. Strong run game. Okay, so I think the Steelers, as much as the Ravens, and I like the what they've added to the defense this year, but I think the Steelers probably still have the best defense in this division, which is part of why I rank the Blast, because I don't think they're going to have to score very much to win necessarily all their games. Maybe certain games, yes, but I think for the most part, they'll be run heavy, play defense type of team that will keep the scores lower, and that's why I have them at four. I think of the Bengals, that defense isn't really good. So Joe Burrow's going to have to sling it a ton, and I think maybe the record won't be as good as the Steelers, but I think the offense will be better in terms of just overall output.
Yeah, I could definitely see it going either way. Cincinnati's going to have to throw. They have a lot of offensive weapons, but their defense is trash, like you said. And Steelers, on the other hand, they have one of the best defenses in the league. But with the offense, it's all around Ben. If Ben's there and he's healthy, it's a really good offense. And for living in Pittsburgh and knowing just how it is, he calls the shot on that team and that offense when he's on the field, which means they're going to throw the ball more than they should with their defense. But everything is on him. It's their three, or I probably could have put him at three to hedge it a little bit, but honestly, they could be anywhere from 2 to 4, and none of it would surprise me.
Kayla, any remarks about the Steelers? Or I guess you haven't talked about the Bengals either. Do you want to say anything about either?
I just think there's a lot of questions at the running back position for Pittsburgh, and I feel more confident if I were to draft Joe Mixon than I would be for somebody
Matt
like
Breeler.
Yeah, for like James Conner or Jalen Samuels or Benny Snell or Anthony McFarlane. Like, let's just say they break up the backfield in four running backs. Like, I don't want a running back, even if it's James Conner, who appears to be the number one, get 10 carries a game when, you know, three other guys take up, you know, 6-7 carries alone. I mean, that's 18-21 carries. So, you know, what are the odds of him being able to get into the end zone? And then looking at the offense as a whole, if you're going back and forth between four running backs. It just questions the team chemistry, the team confidence, the team, you know, just everything about putting them together. And we saw a huge decline in Juju Smith-Schuster last season when Antonio Brown wasn't opposite him to draw the defenders. And he didn't emerge as the number one wide receiver that we all, you know, assumed that he would. I'm confident in Michael Pittman, but again, he's going to be a rookie. So there's just too many question marks. I don't agree that Pittsburgh's offensive line is not good. I think they have one of the best offensive lines, if not the best offensive line in the NFL. So that's really just the only thing I didn't agree with there.
Who said they didn't have a good offensive line?
I thought Alessandro Ryan said that their offensive line was shaken up or wouldn't.
I said they shook up like you played last year because of injuries.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I misunderstood that.
Couple things you said really stood out that I agree with them completely, like with the Juju thing. It's weird because I think he's definitely going to be better than last year, and I agree that he's a number two receiver on any given team. He shines best in that. Yeah. But I think all of last year, for any production with anything on that Steelers offense, needs to be thrown out as a outlier just because Mason Rudolph and Duck Hodges were just putrid. I think Juju's not as good as he was that year, so I agree there. But he's not as bad as he was last year. It's just one of those – last year was bad. And then you talked about Joe Mixon being the best running back in the out of those two teams. He's the best running back that on any team we've talked about so far. And – majority of the teams are going to talk about. I love Joe Mixon, who everyone kind of glazed over, so I was kind of glad you hit him because I forgot about him. He's one of my favorites.
I mean,
he's phenomenal. Yeah. And I want them to unleash him.
Yeah, so I just agree because looking at Joe Mixon, you know, I questioned him the first couple weeks last year, especially because Cincinnati's offensive line looked just so non-existent. I mean, there was no time to find any gaps for him to run in or, you know, give enough time for either Andy Dalton and Ryan Finley, whoever, to throw. But as the season went on, you saw him find a way to have these 100-yard games and even have these 100-yard games against defenses. You know, the Patriots stick out to me, you know, when they're coming into the game, like, granted, they had, you know, flipped records during their matchup. But coming in, New England has to know that Joe Mixon is the best offensive player that Cincinnati had at that given time, and they still allowed more than 100 yards to him. So, you know, maybe it wasn't fair of me to kind of gauge how I thought his season would go in the first couple weeks, because you should never do that as a player anyway. But I think just the overall Cincinnati being so, you know, so rough in so many different places, it really took an unfair hit on Mixon, and he proved that he wasn't, you know, the problem there. So I agree with you.
If he doesn't start getting targets in the passing game, I'm going to lose my mind. Anyhow, sorry.
Well, and you're right, Ryan. I know Akili, our guest a few episodes ago, he loves Joe Mixon so much. I mean, he's been saying he's as good as Le'Veon Bell as a receiver, route runner. He just needs to get those type of target numbers that Bell was getting with the Steelers. And Gio Bernard always kind of caps that. But in terms of best running back in the AFC, Mixon's probably going to catch more passes than Chubb, so I can definitely see that argument of drafting Mixon ahead of Chubb, especially in a PPR league.
Yeah, and it's his backfield. Like, fully.
Yeah, it seems like I would expect Hunt to play more than Bernard will.
Yeah, a 60-40 split's normal. It would be normal in Cleveland, if we're lucky.
Anyway, so we're going to move to the South now, in a division that's actually a little bit more, a little less consensus, actually, than what we've seen in the first two divisions. So AFC South, consensus rankings are the Colts at 1, Texans at 2, Titans at 3, and the Jaguars at 4. So starting off with the Colts, I'm the lowest on them. I had them at 3, actually, and part of my reasoning is I trust the other two quarterbacks more. I trust Deshaun Watson, I trust Ryan Tannehill, which is weird to say, more than I trust Phillip Rivers at this point, coming to a new offense. And yeah, T.Y. Hilton's there, and that's nice, but Rivers, outside of the Green Bay game, of course, because he had to just decimate the Packers that game, but outside of the Green Bay game, he really didn't play that well last year, from what I saw. Really struggled. Again, the interceptions, the Colts, I expect them to be their identity has turned towards this run heavy team, and I just don't know that they're going to score the points that the Titans, who are also a run heavy team, but I also don't expect the Titans to run as much as they did last year. That's part of my reasoning with that ranking. I don't think the defense will necessarily, I mean, the secondary, they lost a few players, so I think on the back end, that defense just isn't going to play up to form, maybe not to what the Colts are, so I expect the Colts will run more, score less perhaps. So that's why I have them at 3. Alessandro, Kayla, you both had them at 1, so what's your reasoning behind that?
Sure, I'll jump in. So I actually, this was the hardest division in the AFC that I felt I had to pick between, but I like Indianapolis for their wide receivers and what I think their run game could do. So obviously, Kyle, you already mentioned that T.Y. Hilton is the number one. Oh, shoot. Did I say Michael Pittman for Pittsburgh when we were talking about that?
I missed that, actually. I didn't. Ryan's paying attention, as always.
Not always.
I don't remember who I was thinking of. Whoever they was, it
Chase Claypool?
Draft? Yeah. Claypool. Okay. Sorry. I meant him. So my apologies on that. But yeah, it's amazing when you start thinking about another team and you realize that you messed up.
You transitioned too quickly. That's all it was. You knew we were going to talk the Colts soon.
Yeah, let's go with that. So yeah, I like what Michael Pittman brings in, and I don't think, you know, Indianapolis using him, between the number 2 and the number even 5 wide receiver is out of the question, and, you know, hurts the other receivers on the team. I think, you know, Zach Pascal proved in a couple of games where he ended up being the number 1 wide receiver last year that he could take a workload. He scored multiple touchdowns in games, despite his low touchdown totals on the year. He played kind of all over the field, not necessarily in Hilton's style of just being, you know, kind of an outside guy. He took snaps in a lot of different places, so I like that. I also like that, you know, CBS Sports reported that Paris Campbell is ahead of schedule on his injury. It was either his ankle or his foot. Ahead of schedule on his foot. Yeah, he broke his foot. And then Marcus Johnson there, too. He didn't get a lot of opportunity last season, but he did see flashes on the field. So I just think actually Indianapolis has more wide receiver depth than a lot of teams in the NFL. So I think they'll be able to use that to their abilities, especially if, you know, let's say Hilton's hamstring injury, you know, resurfaces, or Paris Campbell, you know, his foot gives him some issues. They have guys that can step in that we already saw flashes of that to me showed promise. And then looking at Indianapolis, yeah, they added Jonathan Taylor, and while I don't think that he just moves Marlon back in the seating position here, I think that Indianapolis just bulks up, you know, with already having Nyheim Hines or Jordan Wilkins. Now, while they're more pass-catching backs, that's fine. But, you know, sometimes having two – now, granted, we don't know what Jonathan Taylor is going to do, but I think it can only help them in this situation. So I think, again, a lot of my rankings are based on, you know, depth on wide receivers, running backs. So I think just – what Indianapolis has as pieces for their offense. I think they're also going to be overlooked because of their quarterback play that you kind of alluded to. But while they do have young receivers, they have played together more often, I think. So I just feel like all the pieces as a whole and Indianapolis's offensive line just kind of puts them ahead of other teams. I think there's a lot of, you know, missing congruency in Houston, especially with the absence of DeAndre Hopkins now. I think Tennessee's receiving core is definitely not what Indianapolis is. It'll be interesting to see if A.J. Brown can, you know, improve on his season last year and be more than just kind of a deep threat guy or a long rusher touchdown type guy that we saw towards the end of the season. And I actually had a hard time picking between Tennessee and Jacksonville, so I both gave them a 3. I could have also just both given them a 4. But I just think Indianapolis has more pieces congruent as a whole than any other team in the division.
And is it fair to say that their receiver core is more diverse? I look specifically at the Texans, right, who have a lot of those really fast field stretcher types. And I know Cooks can be a little bit more versatile than that, but it seems like they have a lot of the same type of receiver, whereas Pittman's a lot different than Campbell, and Hilton's a lot different than both of them. And so So maybe in terms of just straight up numbers, the depth, not necessarily, but certainly a lot more versatile and complete of a receiving corps. Is that fair to say, everyone?
I think so.
But anyway, talking about the Texans, have them as our consensus too. Ryan, you're the only one who had them at number one, although I do admit I was really close between them. And actually, I think if I changed my rankings, I think it would have changed our consensus. So you can all blame me again. But Ryan, why did you have the Texans at number one?
Honestly, it starts with Deshaun Watson. He is heads and toes better than any quarterback in the division. I know we had a good season of Tannehill last year. And Phillip Rivers is a proven veteran who's old, and I'm really excited for him because it's the first time his career's had an offensive line. But Deshaun Watson is that dude when it comes to quarterback. He is top four quarterback in the league. He has crazy A dot normally. Last year was his lowest. He's been throwing – his air yards have been over 8.4, 8.5, 7.7. So he likes to throw the ball deep. And that's what they put around him. You got Will Fuller as a field stretcher. Kenny Stills as a field stretcher. Brandon Cooks is that. All of them have had seasons where they've averaged over 15 yards per reception. And they have the wheels to do it. Brandon Cooks, if he can survive, I mean, he's had concussions, but he hasn't missed as many games as people have made it out to be. He's played a lot through the seasons. He had... Last year, he played 14 games. The prior four seasons, he played in 16 games. He had over 1,082 yards in all five of those seasons. He's proved he can produce, and he's just another weapon for Watson there. Watson was working well with Fells, and then you have Randall Cobb, who's a veteran underneath, who's a nice little piece, kind of change that up. And you have two running backs who he can dump the ball off for a fantastic catch. Pass catcher with David Johnson and Duke Johnson. I think this offense is built for him to perform. We haven't seen much out of the dump off for Watson, but that's because he's had one of the best receivers in the game. He may have lost that pure talent of D-Hop where you could just throw it in the area, but Will Fuller's been a star when he's been in there with Watson, and he has a ton of guys who can go get the ball, and their line may not be as great. I think the Colts have the best line in the league. But aren't as great, but Watson can extend plays with his legs, and he adds that rushing upside. There's just so many pieces on that offense who can shine.
And Alessandra, you've got them at three in this division, so you're the lowest on them. So what's your reasoning behind that?
If I could, I would put them at four, but I think the reason I didn't put them at four was because Jacksonville was there. And look, don't get me wrong, I like Deshaun Watson. He could do a lot, but it's Deshaun. He's all alone. Yeah, he's got Will Fuller, but Duke, like you said, he got Duke Johnson in the backfield. I never really had much faith in Duke Johnson.
How about David Johnson?
Okay.
Or Brandon Cooks.
Even behind a good offensive line in Arizona, we saw David Johnson decline. And then now he was coach under Cliff Kingsbury and Bruce Arians. Now he's got – okay, I'm going to be nice about this. He's got Bill O'Brien. So now – sorry, I had to be real nice about that.
Who I still will attest is a really great play caller. Just not – he shouldn't be a GM and probably shouldn't be a head coach either. But play caller, I think he's maybe top five. Certainly top 10, I think.
All right.
Yeah. Maybe.
Moving on. So.
I didn't think that was a hot take, but okay.
But so look, like they got some guys, but as far as it goes is with the offensive line, we saw them struggle. We saw Deshaun run for his life. I mean, the strength with the Texans is their defense. They got better defense than offense, in my opinion. And you know, when I'm looking at these wide receivers, you know, rookie Green, Kenny Stills has the most Kenny Stills and Randall Cobb, they are two that have the most talent years on the team. Yeah, you got Brandon Cooks, but he's been passed around the league so much and he's been hurt so much it hurts a lot. He's been on the Patriots, the Rams, the Saints.
No, he's been passed around. This is 13, but the injuries is really overlooked. 2014, he played 10 games. Then 2015, 16, 17, 18, he played 16. Last year, he played 14. The injuries are overblown.
I also think Cook's getting passed around is overblown because rarely do players ever maintain value in terms of draft capital. The fact that not just one, but two different teams got first round picks trading him, and even the Texans still gave up a second for him. So it's not as if, you know, he's been passed around, but it's not like teams are giving him away. Like, teams are investing serious capital to trade for him, and the Rams invested serious money to pay him too.
And he's produced on every team.
Yeah.
I mean, all right, that's fine. That's great. I mean, you got him, but the offensive line is not there. And hey, I just realized they have Chad Hansen. That's funny. Sorry. That was a side note.
I actually didn't even know that, so thank you for informing us. I don't know if that's useful, but thanks for informing us.
Well, he was a Jets wide receiver from, like, years ago. I'm not a huge fan of the Texans' offense. I don't believe in them. I don't trust them. There's a lot of question marks, and until they get answered, I can't really commit. I mean, you guys can commit and do good, and that's great. You go for it, but when you got Brent Quave, you got
Tunsil's the highest paid left tackle in the league. They just took Roger Johnson in the first round, which was a fantastic pick. They had Tyus Howard in the first round last year, and they signed Nick Martin in free agency. Their line's getting better.
Okay,
it
but
really,
it's four harder.
And I'll give you that it's not the Colts line, but I mean, to be fair to the Titans, they did lose a big piece there in Jack Conklin. So how that line will operate, there's some questioning there. So may not necessarily be that much worse than the Titans.
Well, I mean, I believe in the Titans offensive line more than I believe in the Titans offense more than the Houston's offense. I mean, the Titans offense, I know it's got playmakers all over the field that you can depend on for a game in, game out. Houston's got maybe three as of late before the past 2 years, maybe more, but without D-Hop there, they just sink. I'm sorry. They sink for me a good bit. And, I mean, Tennessee's got – yeah, Tannehill's a decent QB2 in most super flex leagues. If you're feeling frisky, he could be QB1 in your league in a redraft or whatever. They got Derrick Henry, who is, you know, was rushing leader last year. The offensive line is decent, and it could get the job done. I mean, we didn't see it be all that great last year, but it did help Derrick Henry. You know, they got good wide receivers out there. Tight end's a question mark, but, you know, the wide receivers make up for it. I have more hope for the Titans than the Texans.
I also actually have the Titans ahead of the Texans, too. And you say question mark. I think tight end's a giant question mark in this entire division. And if I got to pick anyone, I'm going to pick Jonnu Smith, the athletic freak. Maybe a pretty good chance to be the number two target on his team. So I definitely like him more than anyone else in this. I don't even know who's number two. I guess Jack Doyle. But yeah, I'm definitely much more favored on Smith. And I think ultimately they're not going to, well, maybe they will, but I doubt that they'll be able to run as much as they did last year. I think, again, the secondary's been reworked. Both starting corners are new, I think. Did Logan Ryan, or is Logan Ryan still a free agent, or did he sign with anybody?
He's a free agent because he came to talk to us.
Yeah, so maybe he ends up back with the Titans, and that I think that'll definitely help, but until he does, big question mark at corner on that team. And I mean, I guess they have Jackson, but who's starting opposite him? I don't know. So I just expect that they're going to throw a lot more than they did last year. And I don't think Tannehill's getting the crazy efficiency. Certainly not at 9.7 yards per attempt, which led the league. So those types of things are going to fall back. But I certainly think the volume overall, and I still think Derrick Henry's going to do quite a lot, but Tannehill's going to pass more. It's going to up the volume for guys like A.J. Brown and Jonnu Smith and maybe even Corey Davis. And again, while Conklin left, I still maybe trust that offensive line more than Houston. So I do think they're close. Obviously, I do prefer the quarterback the Texans have, but I think I prefer the rest of the team with what surrounds the Titans. And I mean, I'm on the hill because I'm the only one who said the Titans at number one. So Kayla, Ryan, you both had them at 3. Anyone, either of you want to chime in?
Ryan, you can go ahead.
It comes out to a lot of what Titans did is not repeatable. Like you mentioned, Tannehill's 9 yards an attempt is absurd. He's not going to do that again this year. He kind of took everybody by surprise because he was a interchangeable piece in Miami at best. A.J. Brown, I love A.J. Brown, but his 21 yards per reception last year, we're not going to see that. That's such an outlier in the league, especially now that he's on radar. I think Corey Davis is better than people give him credit for, and same with Adam Humphries. But that offense, is they just want to grind it, man. They don't want to put up a ton of points. They trust their defense, which still got pretty good. It's still really good. And they just want to run the ball and grind it. I think Derrick Henry is going to be a stud again this year. And I like Darrington Evans, but I don't think they're going to pass a lot. And I just don't think we're going to see a lot of that offense. I mean, they still got their secondaries, Dorie Jackson, Malcolm Butler, Kenny Vaccaro, Kevin Byard, which is fantastic. They have pass rushers. They have a great defensive line. It's going to be really hard for teams to score on them, which means we're going to see a steadiness of Derrick Henry, who chances are they're just going to run into the ground this year because he's on a franchise tag, and that's going to be the show.
I guess I forgot that Butler was still there, so that is fair to that second quarter spot aside from Jackson.
In the draft, to Kirsten Fulton in the second round this year.
Yeah, so maybe I did do this wrong. Maybe I should have put the Texans at 1. All right, Ryan convinced me, but I had another point. Now I just totally forgot what it was. But actually, it's a point against my case, so I'm not going to say it. That's why I didn't want to say it. But Vic Beasley, they also got Vic Beasley, so the pass rush might actually improve.
Their defense is really good. Yeah. I think the Jags are going to surprise us a lot, not because maybe talent, but because of necessity. They have probably one of the worst defenses in the league now with all they've lost, and they're going to have to throw the ball. I know they're going to run for not a good bit, but DJ Shark should catch a ton of passes, and somebody else has to step up, whether it's Chenault, first in his lifetime, healthy Westbrook, Keelan Cole. They're going to have to throw the ball because they're going to be down. It's going to be ugly football, but it might put up fantasy points. They're still 4, but I think there's a little more hope than give them credit.
I mean, I know, Kayla, you mentioned you pretty much have them right with the Titans, so it's not that you're necessarily disparaging the Jags that much. Did you want to add anything about the Jaguars specifically?
Yeah, so I think... Again, they have a couple pieces. Both teams have a couple pieces that will work well for their team. Like, looking at it in Jacksonville, I think Gardner Minshew and DJ Chark are a lock. I think as far as running back goes, I'm not high on Leonard Fournette, but he does add to Jacksonville in ways that other running backs can't add to their teams. So, you know, that's one guy in 3 different positions instead of, you know, having the depth at wide receiver, running back, like I have talked about in this episode so far. And I feel that way about Tennessee. I don't agree that Corey Davis is going to do well. Sorry. I'm really not even sold on A.J. Brown. So when you look at, you know, Tennessee's offense, like Ryan said, Ryan Tannehill's mediocre at best. So if, you know, you think that Derrick Henry is not going to run as much as he did last season, then, you know, if they maybe have one guy at the position again, then, you know, it doesn't match up to teams like Indianapolis and Houston who have guy after guy, especially in the receiving core.
That Tannehill's mediocre. There's some aggression behind there, Kayla. Anything personal there?
Extremely mediocre.
I mean, he was a wide receiver and a quarterback position. A decade in Miami and did nothing.
And you got Tagovailoa now, so that's all good.
Is it crazy to think?
Oh yeah, and of course Fitzpatrick, best beard. Is it crazy to think of Chark as the best receiver in this? At least from a redraft perspective, maybe even from a dynasty perspective.
Out of this division or in general?
Well, in this division,
I think he's 2 in this division. I think AJ Brown's still better, yeah. But I like Chark. I like Chark. He's a lot better than I thought he was going to be. I'll admit he was one of my draft misses. But, yeah, he's looked really good. And he brings a lot to that team, especially because they like to sling it around.
Yeah, and I do wonder, I mean, bigger target, maybe not necessarily target share, but just a significant of higher target amount than Brown if the Titans don't run a lot. I wonder if he outproduces them enough that it'd be better to draft him. So that I haven't fully finished out my wide receiver tiers yet, but I'm guessing those two are probably pretty close. And I don't know, I think I might lead Chark right now, to be honest.
I have Brown at 15 in PPR, Chark at 19.
Okay, points per game, you're saying?
PPR. I have it overall points. But yeah, I have them.
Oh, that was the rank, sorry.
That's where I have them ranked, yeah. I have them. Okay. 15 and 19.
Okay, so you expect both to be wide receiver twos.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, I thought you were saying that was like their points per game. Oh, okay, he has Chark 4 points higher. That's good for me.
Oh, I don't have anybody that high.
Yeah, I do realize 19 points, that is pretty ridiculous. Yeah,
he'd probably be top three then.
I was going to say Thomas probably surpassed that last year, but I don't know if anyone else did.
Yeah, that would put him at wide receiver two for me.
Yeah, okay, so DJ Chark isn't getting 19 points a game, folks, don't worry. We'll head over to the West now. Shocker, all of us have the Chiefs at number one. Is there anything that really needs to be said here?
No.
Well, actually, all of us have the Broncos at two as well. Is this the weapons they brought in specifically in the draft, and then adding Melvin Gordon in free agency? Those are all the main factors behind that. Is the miss anything?
Yeah, they're doing right by their young quarterback. They have a lot of weapons there, a lot of talent there. You have two good running backs, potentially three good receivers. I'm fully on board with Sutton and Judy. I think Hamler could be decent. I think Noah Fant has top five tight end potential.
I knew that. I knew this was coming.
not this year. I don't have him that high this year. But I think that year three breakout, year four breakout, I think he has that in him because he is such a great pass catcher. But he's more of a pass. He's not a traditional tight end. He's in tight end, and that means that Evan Ingram's a tight end, where they're just an oversized receiver.
Really, the only debate here is our consensus three is the Raiders, Chargers four. So the home team co-hosts all agreed here. All of us were unanimous on all four choices. So Ryan, you've got to do all the defending here. So you have the Chargers at three and the Raiders at four, which is opposite from the rest of us. I know for myself, those two are really close. Was it close for you as well, Ryan, or do you see the Chargers significantly?
No, I was really fighting with myself on it. And chances are, the only real difference is I think you have a little bit more high-end talent with the pass catchers for the Chargers. I think Keenan Allen's still a top 12 wide receiver in the league. He's done nothing but produce when he's on the field, and it doesn't matter who's throwing the ball to him. He catches everything and he gets wide open. I think Mike Williams is a legit red zone threat and can go up and get the ball. And Hunter Henry, when he's been on the field, has been really good. Plus, we've seen good things out of Austin Eckler last year, and they've really put him where he can be the lead back. I definitely think Josh Jacobs is a better back than him. Let's not get that wrong. I'm excited to see what the offense does once Herbert takes over. But while Taylor's in there, he's going to give you efficient numbers. He's going to get those guys enough volume to produce, and he gives you rushing upside. And Herbert gives you a little bit surprising rushing upside too, because he was very athletic as a quarterback. But the big thing is no matter who starts in Chargers, I believe in them more than Carr, and I believe in the high upside of Keenan Allen and Mike Williams over them. And I think Henry's better than Waller as well.
I think I might disagree with you on that last point of Henry being better than Waller. I think Waller really proved a lot last year, and it's flash, but I don't know that Henry's proved that consistently yet.
I mean, as considered injury, we've seen Waller's, how old is he now? He's not as young as people make him think. He played all those years where he just kind of wasted away in Baltimore.
He really just won, yeah, big blow-up season. It's not as if, yeah, he's young. I think he is 27.
He is 27, and he'll turn 28 this season. And he had some really off-field issues, and I'm really happy that he was able to turn it around. But he got a ton of volume last year. We're not going to see that kind of volume again because they brought in more weapons. That's what I think is going to be the difference is. Like, it's a one-year thing, and it was based because he had an absurd amount of targets from tight end position.
it almost does feel like what Evan Engram was a couple years ago when Beckham was hurt pretty early in the year. Shepard went down. Suddenly Evan Engram saw, 120 targets? And he's yet to repeat that feat. And yeah, injuries have also been a thing for him, but it I am getting that bit of a sense.
117's a lot.
Yeah. But okay, so do you have him below 100 targets then, Waller?
No, I'm at 101.
Okay.
So I think he's going to be very good this year, and I may have him.
I think I am at tight end 5, but I'm sure anywhere in the expectations of 4 through 7, 8 probably seems realistic.
Actually, I have Waller over Henry right now. I just argued the wrong point. I have them 4. I have them 4 and 6. I believe Henry's a better tight end.
Just the overall talent, a bit younger as well, but
correct.
Based on 2020, again, 4 and 6, 2 spots, so it's probably not much of a difference. I don't know if I have Henry that high up at 6. Alessandro, Kayla, either of you want to talk about either the Raiders or the Chargers?
This decision was hard for me. I went back and forth a lot. And for me, it really came down to the faith that I had in the quarterback position for both teams. I've never been a fan of Tyrod Taylor, and I'm not a fan of Justin Herbert. So I think, whether we're not sure if Derek Carr or Marcus Mariota is going to start for Vegas, and, those are not, in my opinion, not stellar options for the team. I think that they are better than both quarterbacks that could be inserted for the Chargers, no matter how I feel. I agree that Keenan Allen still has the potential to be one of the, top receivers in the league. I do like Hunter Henry. I am a huge Austin Eckler fan, but I'm nervous that whatever quarterback's under center is not going to use him the way Philip Rivers used him. It seemed like they were always on the same wavelength and that, Rivers could always rely on him, whether it was to be a pass-catching back, to catch a short pass on the field, rush the football. And I'm afraid that that's going to be dwindled down and taken away from Eckler because of the poor quarterback play. And I also think, Vegas set themselves up to have as many receiving options as they want to try to nail that down. So I think with the combination of Josh Jacobs and Darren Waller with better quarterback play is what elevated me to put the Raiders above the Chargers.
I'm curious on this. So we got Derek Carr, Justin Herbert, Marcus Mariota, Tyrod Taylor. Anyone want to guess at who starts the most games out of those four?
Carr. Oh, Jesus.
I think Carr. I think he starts all season.
Okay, you don't expect Mariota to come in?
No, I don't.
Okay, that I kind of do, but I might still say Carr. I think it might happen later in the season. It might end up being Carr starts 10 games and they eventually decide to go to Mariota. And as for Tyrod Herbert, who knows?
I'd probably go with Derek Carr.
Same.
All right, so I guess we all expect Carr to start the most games then. I think it is similar to Denver. Brought in some rookie wide receivers, not quite as early of investments as Denver made. Although, getting Bryan Edwards as late as they did, probably really good value there. Never mind. They drafted a receiver. They were the first team to take a receiver. That was dumb. Oh man. All right. So Kyle's not. I'm back.
He's got hurt moving furniture.
It's okay. You and my Michael Pittman comment can just be together.
So if we rank the co-host, does Alessandro actually rank number one?
Yeah, he didn't have a mistake yet.
Yeah.
I had one earlier. I just don't remember what it was now. Thank God.
Oh, I think it was. Wasn't it Mostert?
Yeah, it was Mostert. Yeah. Mostert Rita.
You said that and I was like, what?
All the same.
Ultimately, what it came down to, in my defense of the Raiders, it was the defense. And I don't really think the Raiders' defense is very good at all. Just that back end secondary really needs a lot of work. And I don't know if they've addressed it nearly enough. So that being said, I expect that they'll be airing it out a bit more than the Chargers, who, again, with Anthony Lynn as head coach, may run a bit more of that defense. They've added to it. It's incredibly talented secondary. Maybe the deepest secondary for just overall every position outside of New England and Buffalo, maybe in the whole conference. True. Ravens as well.
Casey Hayward, Chris Harris, Derwin James, Des McCain. It's really good. Yeah.
So anyway, all because of that, I feel like, again, if the Raiders are going to want to keep in, they may be in more high scoring affairs simply because their defense is going to let them down. And I think that's why I put them ahead, just simply that. If, again, it's something I've been saying throughout this episode, when in doubt, go towards the worst defense. And I think that's the better offense, more voluminous offense, we'll say.
Yeah, can't argue that.
Wonder, is this volume of the podcast complete? any final remarks about any of these teams we talked about today?
No, I can't say I have any.
Michael Pittman does not play for Pittsburgh.
Matt Breida doesn't play for the Dolphins. Henry Ruggs was drafted before Jerry Jeudy.
Breida does play for the Dolphins.
Oh my! So never mind. Kyle isn't back. He's still very.
They're the same person, just like I said.
Matt Breida and Matt Breida are the same person.
Exactly.
I am shocked by this. Sorry for the shocking episode with all our mistakes. But do really appreciate Ryan coming by. Ryan, you want to let the people know where they can find and follow you?
Yeah, awesome. You can find me on Twitter. I'm on there all the time. Ryan Sirfoss at Fantasy FB Connect. You can find me at goingfortwo.com. I write for them. I do the Armchair Fantasy Show every Tuesday. I also write for the Dynasty Draft Room, and I hop on their podcast a decent amount as well. But yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. Really had fun.
Yeah, no worries. Every Tuesday, 9:30. I'm always in the live chat. Usually, it's a great happening time.
We're live with video on everything.
Yeah, the real professionals there.
One of us is, and it's not me.
Yeah, Jeff is pretty amazing. As are you too, though, Ryan.
Appreciate
you very much. Also, some amazing people, Alessandra and Kayla. Thanks joining me again. carrying my weight. Henry Ruggs was drafted by the Raiders. It is true. Yes. So you can follow all of us on Twitter. Alessandro's at AM_Senator. Kayla's at NorthToKayla74. Myself at Nyama_KS. And follow the podcast at FPC_FantasyPod. Also be sure to download the Full Press Coverage app for both Android and Apple. It's free. You can gain full access to all of our articles, podcasts, and access to the Full Press Radio Network, which streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Any final remarks from anybody?
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Yes, we appreciate very much, Ryan, for you coming on this episode of the Full Press Fantasy Pod.